is submitted. We'll hear an argument next in 00346, Norfolk Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Corporation versus Garris. Mr. Farini.
Mr. Chief Justice, if it please the court, this is a decidedly local tort action, which defendant respectfully submits, does not invoke a federal uniformity interest. Certainly, it does not invoke a need for such interest so compelling as to require this court to create or infer a wrongful death cause of action based on general negligence under circumstances where there is no claim of vessel liability. What this case is not is a case which would involve any concept endemic to or originating in or peculiar to the sea. We are not concerned about seamen's responses. We are not concerned about unseaworthiness or any form of vessel liability.
Mr. Farini, how does your case differ from the Kermarack case, the one this court decided in 1959?
In Kermarack, Your Honor, which involved negligence, the negligence was negligence in the operation of a vessel. Either it was in navigating or the manner in which it was operated, but nothing like our case where we have a local enterprise that was operating a crane that was located on a pier over.
That case did recognize, didn't it, a claim for negligence under general maritime law?
Your Honor, I believe it did, but again, that was a case of a visitor on a vessel, and the captain of the vessel had an obligation to make sure that the stairway was in good condition, etc.
But here
you're dealing with a concept which I think to be very akin to that in Meringue. What we're dealing with there is a concept of the manner in which a vessel is operated, a vessel is maintained for the safety of people on it, and that is the kind of concept which requires uniform treatment.
But Moraine dealt with, by its terms, with unseaworthiness. And the question you've presented here is whether Moraine is a basis for also extending that doctrine to negligence as well as unseaworthiness. And yet in Kermarack, it seems that we've already recognized a general maritime claim for negligence. You feel this is different?
Your Honor, I think what we have to do is look at the concept of uniformity in the context of Article 3, Section 2 in the Federalist Papers, and think in terms of why is it that this particular body of law, as of all bodies of law there are, this substantive body of admiralty is given to this court and to Congress. And the purpose is so that the nation speaks with one voice under circumstances where there can be an impact on our relationship with our partners in trade.
Well, Mr. Farini, the question on which we granted certiorari, I thought, was whether a general maritime law cause of action for wrongful death in negligence exists or should exist. In other words, whether Moraine should extend to wrongful death action based on negligence. And I didn't — have you raised below the question of even if it does, even if the answer is yes, it should. It shouldn't apply here because these are all land-based actors. I mean, I would have thought that would be a logical defense to raise, but I don't see that as part of the question. Suppose I say yes, Moraine extends to wrongful death based on negligence, but does it extend to totally land-based action like this? You didn't raise that, apparently.
In your Fourth Circuit, Your Honor, quite frankly, the focus of the court and the parties was upon what does Moraine create rather than should it create an exception.
Well, answer my question. Suppose I say yes, Moraine. Sure, it extends to that. We've been saying that all along, in dicta at least. Suppose I say yes. Is it open then to make your argument that whatever Moraine extends to, it doesn't apply to totally land-based actors like these? Is that open?
I think it's certainly open, Your Honor, because when you made your decision in Moraine, the idea was not just is there a general cause of action for all circumstances for wrongful death. No, the focus was on seaworthiness and on maritime duties. And by the same token, if you're going to here decide that there is a wrongful death action created under the Moraine rationale, if that much of Moraine is even left existent, certainly I think this court has the jurisdiction to determine under what circumstances. And just as
I just didn't think you raised that here. I mean, and we ended up with this very limited question about whether Moraine, to the extent it applies at all, extends to wrongful death actions based on negligence. But these other questions I didn't think were presented to us.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I view our question as having been raised as whether there is a wrongful death cause of action under the circumstances with which the court is presented.
But you are arguing the limitation, it seems to me, would death wouldn't matter. It would be just as landlocked if it had been mere injury, and that's the question I'd like you to answer under the law as you see it. Suppose Mr. Garris had not been killed, he'd just been badly injured, would he have an action under federal maritime law for negligence?
If he were on the vessel at the time, as he was,
this
yes, he
would. Very case. Don't change a thing.
He would.
He would. So
he would.
Then you can't. Then you're not making a distinction based on landlocked versus something else. You're making a distinction based on death versus injury.
In that respect, I am, Your Honor, because this Court has created a general maritime body of law dealing with injury. There's no two ways about that. But the result would be different because the fact that the state law does not give the same remedy that general body of law gives is not an objective of uniformity.
But all of your discussion about state domain versus admiralty maritime, it seems to fall apart when one recognizes that it can be the very same accident. It's maritime if he's merely injured, but it can't, no maritime responsibility if he's killed. And that seems to be a hard line to explain to anyone, at least who's not a lawyer.
Well, maritime law has been described as one of the most complex areas, and it certainly is a patchwork. And that is the historical consequence of the way things developed.
But you were giving something beyond historical patchwork. You were giving some kind of rationale distinction between landlocked, sea duty, federal, state. And I could accept all that were it not for that the distinction is only death versus injury.
Well, I respectfully submit that to create a monistic single area of law covering both death and injury, the first thing this Court would have to do is overrule the Tungus. It would have to overrule.
Why? Tungus just said you can take the state wrongful death claim. Let's take Yamaha, where this Court recognized that you could have a claim under the State Wrongful Death Act. It took that position even on the assumption, and it was only an assumption in that case, that you could also have a claim under Moraine.
Yes, this court did not decide, however, in footnote 7, this court said we are not deciding that there is such a cause of action, but I take it a step further. What this court, I believe, was assuming was the existence of a cause of action against the manufacturer of a vessel, because that is what a jet ski has been determined to be. And it comes back to my same concept of what is the purpose of uniformity. And I don't think the purpose of uniformity is that all remedies be the same in all circumstances, because that's exactly what Your Honor said was not the objective of uniformity in the Yamaha case.
But that was a case where you could have both state and federal remedies if there was a federal remedy, and we said, if there was a federal remedy, that wouldn't preclude also having a state remedy.
I think what Your Honor is driving at is the possibility of concurrent existence of a federal cause of action and a state cause of action. And I hasten to point out that that is the one thing my opponent has not raised or urged. And why is that? Because I do not believe that that is consistent with uniformity. If uniformity, the purpose of uniformity, is going to be that there is some semblance of reliability in knowing what cause of action is going to exist, once you create a dual system, then everything is up in the air. Your insurance questions, your rates, everything's up in the air because we don't know in any individual death what law the plaintiff is going to invoke.
So then your answer must be, in the case of injury, it's only maritime law, it's only federal law, not state law.
I think that that is, in the case of injury, absolutely. I agree with that. There is this existing body of law, and I don't think, however, that the fact that that is a solitary body of law is a matter of uniformity.
But regardless of whether it's a matter of uniformity or not, if the federal maritime law covers it in the case of injury, what is the justification for a separate regime in the case of death?
Well,
maybe I misunderstood your answer to several questions, but going back to the Chief Justice's question about Kermarack, I understood you to assume that, yes, there is a general maritime cause of action for negligence.
Yes.
And I understood you to have said later on in the argument that if this individual had merely been injured but had not been killed, that that cause of action would apply. And if that's the case, the question for us, I think, is why should we have a separate regime when the negligence is efficient enough to cause his death?
First, I'd like to correct an answer I gave earlier to the Chief Justice. I forgot. I believe Kermarack was an injury case and not a death case. Totally different situation.
No. It was an injury case, and I think what we're driving at is why should it be a different situation?
Again, it comes back to what this Court sees as the purpose of uniformity.
Well, before we get to uniformity, what about irrationality? If we're going to recognize the cause of action for the injured, why are we not going to recognize the cause of action when death ensues?
Because this Court never has. Death was...
Well, I know. If we had, we wouldn't have this case. The question is, why shouldn't we? What is the rational basis for distinguishing the one from the other?
To me, Your Honor, because that would be result-oriented. Going the other way, then, in a situation where the state law is more favorable.
Why is it result-oriented to have symmetry in the law?
Well, isn't your answer historical?
It's historical, and it's a departure from the objective with which this Court is granted the power of uniformity.
Well, is the court wrong under uniformity to have federal admiralty law with reference to injuries?
I think, to be quite frank, that things developed beyond a clear view of what the mission of the court was.
You don't agree with Moraine, basically. I mean, if you're saying what you're saying here about uniformity, you probably don't agree with Moraine.
Not at all, Your Honor. I do agree with Moraine.
You do agree with Moraine. Well, I really can't say why, having decided Moraine, we want to draw the line between... If indeed we didn't already cross that bridge in Moraine, I don't know why we would want to
because
injury and death.
This Court has recognized time and time again that you must treat everybody the same, no matter where they are on the sea. And when you're dealing with unseaworthiness, that vessel had better be operational, regardless of whether it's in territorial waters or in the Sea of Japan or next door. Because everybody had — let's put it this way. I think uniformity, the concept of uniformity, is very similar to the concept of diversity of citizenship, which the purpose of which is fair treatment of foreigners. And regardless, if you're dealing with a seaman who gets in Italy and he comes over here and he's injured over here, he has to be treated the same. But when you're dealing in a case like this with a harbor worker and you're dealing with local businesses like my client that's named after Norfolk, and this, in the there would have been no — talk about abnormalities or there would be no recovery. We wouldn't even be here if this particular crane had struck him while he was doing preparatory work on the dock. There is no such thing as perfect symmetry. You'll never reach that.
Then we should go back and overrule Kermorak.
Not at all, Your Honor. I think that's too far developed to do that. I think that there —
in other words, general it's wrong, maritime, but it's clearly established error.
Clearly established. And I think that's the purpose of the Talbot case my opponent relies on. He says, well —
You said, before you go on to Talbot, you said symmetry and treating like situations alike. This survivor, this mother, what was the recovery that she got? She got a workers' compensation recovery.
Yes.
And that was what?
I am told, I have no authority on this, and I don't believe it's in the record, I'm told what she got was the funeral expenses, which is what Congress decided she should get since there was no dependency.
That was up to $3,000.
I have no idea, Your Honor.
And yet, if her son had survived, there would have been a large recovery, and you'd say that that was okay, just negligence under maritime law. Why isn't there a gross inequality in those two situations?
Because I think what Your Honor is looking at is the particular jurisdiction. If this had happened in New York Harbor, where the law is different, there would be a substantial recovery. But the Fourth Circuit got it wrong when the Fourth Circuit said that it's happenstance that the man was killed in Norfolk Harbor rather than New York Harbor. He was in Norfolk Harbor because that's where he lived, and that's where he worked, and that's where he died. And the state should be able to provide for their interest in deciding the familial issues of wrongful death, who should recover and how much they should recover. It should be able to decide that what a statutory employer will get as a quid pro quo for giving the benefits. And I would point out, there's a very little difference between the LHWCA and the Virginia Wrongful Death Statute. Both of them have the concept of a statutory employer. Both of them have the concept that that statutory employer is immune from common law or statutory actions. The only difference is that in Virginia, they guarantee the money will be there by saying, if you hire somebody to do a job, you have to go out and get insurance to make sure that comp benefit is there, where the federal statute says you only have to go out and get that insurance if the person you've hired hasn't fulfilled his responsibility. And that's kind of an iffy thing, because he can show you a certificate of insurance, and it turns out to be that there's no coverage for one reason or another. All I'm saying is that this is a very limited exception, a very limited case where this man's descendants or his mother will have no recovery. But it's not the ordinary case. And I don't think the law can change based upon the happenstance that we don't like a result for this particular plaintiff, because in the next case, you're going to be very happy with the results for the particular plaintiff.
I think the question is whether it's the line between injury and death is a valid one.
Well, I think it is, because you are then dealing with familial issues, which the state has a strong interest in. Who should recover in the event of death? What should their relationship be to the decedent? What should be the degree of dependency, if any? These have always been left to the state.
Why couldn't you pick up that part from state law?
Well, that's kind of a pick-and-choose thing, Your Honor. I think that the law has to be consistent. You either apply state law or you don't.
Doesn't federal law do that in other instances, not decide have an independent federal law of who will be the survivors in the case of a federal tort?
I can't comment on the full area, but certainly the Tungus case said you take state law. If you're taking state law, you take state law as it is with all the parts of it.
Yes, but I wasn't asking you. The state law in Tungus was the liability as well as who picks it up. But now where you seem to be suggesting that if you had federal law, you'd also have to invent who the survivors are for purposes of wrongful death, and I'm suggesting that there's no reason why you couldn't pick that up from state law.
I don't see that as consistent with uniformity, but again, Your Honor, what I think the court is doing is proposing to fashion a remedy to benefit an individual in very limited circumstances where the bottom line is that the state application of state law, consistent with this court's majority, concurring, and dissenting opinions in American dredging, has no impact on commerce. I think we're losing sight of the objective in order to fashion a remedy. I think that I would suggest
again,
that.
Again, if you're going to talk about impact on commerce, there really can't be any difference between injury and death. So I think once you concede that the injury would be covered by federal law, you can't make an argument about the Commerce Clause that wouldn't apply to both.
I do not believe that everything this Court has developed in the way of substantive law for injury is necessarily something that is required for uniformity in the sense of the constitutional basis of it, but rather a symmetry, and that's just the way things develop. But let me point out, in Pope and Talbot, my opponent points out that in that particular case, look, they refused to apply the state contributory rule because there was a federal rule of comparative negligence. Why? That wasn't — this Court didn't say that that was because of uniformity concerns. The Court did so saying, look, we have considered the — we've already created a body of law, and in that existing body of law, we've created certain rights. And those rights now exist. And if a right exists by virtue of a congressional action or by a decision of this Court, a state can't take it away. So that body of law is not representative as a whole of a need for uniformity in all aspects of law. I respectfully submit that what I'm offering this Court is a predictability that we look, as Professor Force suggests, to our national interests, that we look, as this Court suggested in American dredging, to the impairment of commerce, or to the Kamen Court, where the Court of Appeals of New York looked to whether state law had extraterritorial effect, and if it didn't have that kind of effect, then there was no need for preemption. There was no uniformity concern.
It just seems to me that the language in Moraine itself points in the direction of extending liability to negligence if it can be characterized as a violation of a maritime duty. But where our court has never really spoken to the question is whether that kind of liability extends beyond the owners of the vessels to people who are land-based. And I think that's where there's more of a question, although it certainly wasn't raised here very clearly. If it were a vessel owner who was the defendant here, would you take the same position that you're taking today?
My position is, if it's a vessel owner, I can perfectly understand adoption or creation of a cause of action for the sake of uniformity. I would point out to Your Honor that my opponent's main argument, I view as saying, this Court in Moraine talked of maritime duties. What is a maritime duty? If a man comes on a vessel and pulls a gun on another man, he's violated duties, but not maritime duties. Negligence, as an abstract concept, is not a maritime duty. The maritime duty, I submit, has to do with the manner in which the vessel is operated. And this Court has never said anything to the contrary. I point out to Kamarek and Leathers. the two cases that are said to refer to negligence as a maritime duty or a breach of a maritime duty, they dealt with vessel liability. Or the East River case, which is stated by my opponent to refer to products liability as a breach of a maritime duty. That was the product there was the main propulsion unit for the vessel. We keep coming back to the same thing, so that you treat people the same no matter where they are on the sea.
Mr. Farini, you trying to make now something special about ships and their navigation, and in part that's true, but let's just take your a slip and fall on a deck, on a banana peel. That could have well happened on the sidewalk, but it happened to have happened on the ship. There's nothing about that conduct of leaving the banana peel that's maritime, or do you see something?
I don't purport to give you an answer for every case that will arise in the future, but I think that if that banana peel was dropped by a crew member, you could have a breach of a maritime duty, but if it was dropped by another visitor and the crew had no chance to clean it up, that's negligence, but that is not a breach of a maritime duty. I keep coming back to the concept of what is it that we're trying to achieve. And what we're trying to achieve is a uniform treatment of foreigners, much like the diversity concept.
Mr. Greeny, can I ask you just what your response is to one of the arguments made in the concurring opinion below, namely that it would not have been necessary to overrule the Harrisburg unless it was decided to recognize a cause of action for negligence?
I think Harrisburg had to be overruled in order to recognize
that was just a negligence case.
I'm sorry?
Wasn't the Harrisburg just a negligence case?
Negligent vessel.
Yes, but it was negligence as opposed to seaworthiness.
That's right. Yeah. But it dealt with a negligent vessel. It did not deal with general negligence. And the rule was nothing survives after death, and no personal action survived. So that had to be overruled, or it was impossible for Moraine to exist.
Well, it could have been distinguished. It could have been distinguished, as Judge Hall pointed out, by saying that's limited to this is not a negligence case, therefore the Harrisburg is not squarely in point.
Not if the Court wanted to do as it did and broadly state we're talking about unseaworthiness and breach of maritime duties, because the breach of maritime duty was at issue in the Harrisburg since it was vessel liability. I'd like to reserve whatever I have left.
Very well, Mr. Farini. Mr. O'Donnell, we'll hear from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I'd like to first address one of the points that Mr. Farini just raised and that Justice O'Connor asked about, and that was whether this new subspecies of maritime negligence law, which has been dubbed vessel negligence, was raised below. In fact, it was not. It was raised for the first time in the reply brief. And we believe there are a number of reasons not to, for this Court to adopt yet another difficult distinction within the very complex law
of
maritime.
Is this the same thing that Justice O'Connor inquired of you, your opponent, about there being all land-based actors here?
Well,
Are those two different things, or is it basically a rephrasing of the same thing?
Well, we would not agree with the characterization that it is true that Mr. Garris did not live aboard the ship.
He was a longshoreman, wasn't he?
He was a ship repair worker.
Ship repair worker who did not live on the ship.
That is correct. But the
employer was a land-based contractor who did work on ships at dock to repair them.
Yes, Justice O'Connor.
Yes. He not a vessel owner.
No. The defendant was a subcontractor to an Orshipco that was hired to sandblast the hulls inside the vessel, and Mr. Garris was asked to assist in that effort, and in doing so, he was asked to climb up to some scaffolding, whereupon he was knocked off, fell, and died aboard the ship. But the argument that it was mere happenstance that he died aboard the ship, I think, ignores the very reason he was aboard the ship. It wasn't, as in Kermarack. Kermarack, they had a social visitor aboard the ship. Mr. Freeney acknowledges that's maritime in nature. it's hard to imagine a more maritime activity than what Mr. Garris himself was engaged in.
But Kerouac sued the vessel owner.
Yes, Your Honor.
And here you did not sue the vessel owner.
No, we did not believe we had a negligence claim against the vessel owner as the Enterprise was being controlled by Norshipco.
So the case is therefore distinct, and factually at any rate, from Kerouac.
It is. I would say it's very close, however, to the Robbins dry dock case, in which the lawsuit there was not against the ship owner, but against the shipyard. And that was also a negligence case and achieved the same result. In other words, there the court refused to apply the state law in deference to the federal law in general maritime, and it did so, we contend, out of uniformity concerns.
In Kerouac, negligence under federal admiralty law was not discussed, I take it, because there was a apparently parallel state negligence law which was adequate. Is that the way you read Kerouac?
I read Kerouac as suggesting that the law was different. In fact, that there was a contributory negligence law under the state statute, and that under maritime law, comparative negligence would apply. And also, Kerouac had another issue in that.
Well, I thought Kerouac was an unseaworthiness case, and that this court did not address whether there was a federal admiralty cause of action based on negligence. Am I wrong about that?
I think that's Moraine, Your Honor. Kerouac actually dealt with negligence. Precisely.
Well, there was negligence under New Jersey law.
New York.
I'll read it again. You what was the holding of Kerouac with reference to federal admiralty law of negligence in a wrongful death case?
That in Kerouac, the law regarding comparative negligence would be the rule rather than the state contributory negligence rule, and also that the state rules regarding different duties owed to invitees, licensees, and the other classifications would not apply in maritime law because maritime law had rejected those types of distinctions in favor of a uniform reasonable care under the circumstances test. So that in that case, I would disagree. I would think that Kerouac can be read and should be read as a vindication of maritime uniformity principles in almost all respects. It does involve an injury. It is distinguishable only because it's an injury case, but I would submit that that distinction is not a distinction that the court should maintain.
And the court, as I understand it, Kerouac, the court there said that because the guy was a visitor, there was no duty of seaworthiness owed to him.
Correct. There would be no duty of seaworthiness owed to a casual social visitor is what the court described him as. The injury-death distinction, as Justice Stevens correctly points out, is historical. But it is historical only because it derived out of the Harrisburg. Prior to the Harrisburg, and if the Harrisburg itself records those prior decisions, and there are some that say there is no wrongful death, but on balance, the clear majority of the opinions that the Harrisburg reviews finds a negligence-based maritime cause of action for wrongful death. And we would submit that once the Harrisburg was overturned in Moraine, the entire historical underpinnings of that distinction, which we submit was not a good distinction to begin with, but even the historical basis for it was removed. And so now that distinction is floating in air. There's no historical or logical.
We have talked in terms of general maritime duties, I guess, which could include negligence, a duty not to be negligent.
Absolutely. And the court used.
But I'm not sure that it extends to all land-based actors.
Well, I would agree. I don't think it may extend to all land-based actors, but in this instance, Mr. Garris was involved in a very fundamental aspect of maritime activity, and that is the repairing of vessels, the unseaworthy.
That was the case in Robbins, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
You cited Robbins a moment ago. Is there any, with respect to the concept of land-based, is there any distinction between Robbins and this?
I would submit not. He was involved in the same activity, and he was injured in that activity, and the court recognized he had a general maritime cause of action for negligence. So we do rely on Robbins, and the only distinction I can find in that is that it was an injury versus a death case.
Well, why isn't that something that the court should now respect, even if it made no sense, it emerges from the English common law that there was no common law action for wrongful death, and now we have DOSHA, and we have the possibility of picking up state wrongful death acts for watery deaths. Why couldn't one say, even if it made no sense, this distinction between surviving injury and death, now the field is so occupied by statutes, state wrongful death statutes, DOSHA for death on the high seas, that the court ought to stay out of it and leave it all to legislation?
Well, I think what exists under a view that Moraine does not extend to negligence-based wrongful death is a gap in the federal remedy scheme in which the maritime duty to not negligently kill someone has no corresponding federal maritime remedy unless Moraine is interpreted as extending such a remedy.
Well, and when you say gap, that just means a situation unfavorable to the plaintiff, in your view, I take it.
Well, it's a gap in that the federal law does not permit it, but it in this instance and in other instances, what it will mean is that state law, which incorporates principles which are directly contrary to federal maritime principles, would govern, and they would deny the remedy, and we would submit that in that instance.
Well, you say they're directly contrary, or what do you mean by that?
Well, for instance, in Virginia, the Virginia statutory employer statute says that in these circumstances, NorShipCo would be immune from suit, whereas the federal statutory employer statute would reach the exact opposite result. In addition, you have the state of Virginia having a contributory negligence bar.
Well, but so the state of Virginia law grants more immunity to employers, what, subcontractors, than the federal law does? Because certainly a longshoreman can't sue his employer. Under the federal
law. And he was not employed by NorShipCo. Yeah. He was employed by a subcontractor. But under federal law, unless NorShipCo actually paid the benefits, they do not receive statutory
employment. Okay, so you have two different systems. And, you know, if you're out at sea, there's no doubt the maritime law. But why, when you've got a situation like this, all land-based actors, why shouldn't the state system prevail?
Well, we would submit that first of all, there is a presumption that where federal maritime jurisdiction exists, federal maritime law ought to apply. We would also submit that in this very instance, the Robbins case would hold that maritime law ought to apply. We would also say that the need for uniformity in the administration of the maritime law counsels in favor of applying the federal standards.
Well, but you get to a point, certainly, where you have to pick up some parts of the various state regimes.
Well, if this court recognizes a Moraine negligence-based wrongful death action, I'm not sure that's entirely true. I think what would happen in those instances is, and what we are asking for is just that. We are not, as Mr. Farini suggested, arguing that all state law should be preempted within territorial waters.
If you're going to get a wrongful death cause of action, you're going to have to turn to state law to decide who the beneficiaries are you not?
Well, perhaps with regard to simply deciding the beneficiary,
well, that,
not
so
the liability.
You say simply deciding. You couldn't proceed without some scheme for deciding who the beneficiaries are, could you?
Not in ultimately divvying out the remedies. That's true. But the fundamental liability standards we submit must be governed by federal maritime law to preserve uniformity. And for that reason, we think that applying the state standard would get the court right and the lower courts right back into the Tungus mess, whereas the court is the lower courts now have to analyze every aspect of the state law in order to determine which it would apply. And I would say the Tungus would say you apply everything in whole, but on remand in the Yamaha case, the Third Circuit said we're not going to – I don't think they overruled the Tungus, but they suggested another course of activity was to apply the federal liability standards, and that same course was filed in the Amtrak.
But that's certainly the question we were given in Yamaha was, does the State Wrongful Death Act apply? There was nothing about — there wasn't a claim before us under federal maritime law. The question was whether you could apply the State Wrongful Death Act. I take it what you're telling us is that Mr. Farini was right when he said if you prevail that there is a federal maritime law claim for wrongful death, then there is no longer the claim that this court thought was a viable one in Yamaha. That is a wholly state-based wrongful death claim.
We are that is not our fight, Your Honor. We are asking for the Moraine, and we are not saying that if you adopt the Moraine, you necessarily preempt state.
But I'm asking you, there's a precedent out there. You're urging that we hold for you. It would be, I think, quite inexplicable if we didn't say where Yamaha stands in light of the holding in your favor, if we were to rule for you.
We don't think a ruling recognizing a Moraine negligence-based cause of action would infringe on Yamaha.
Well, Mr. O'Donnell, didn't Robbins, which you rely on, go on to say that if it is a maritime suit here, then it could not be enlarged or impaired by state statute or state law? It indicated that was it. Just look to the maritime.
Yes, Your Honor. The maritime action itself, what I thought I was being asked by Justice Ginsburg was whether or not that precluded the application of state wrongful death statutes. We would submit
that. In addition to.
The court in Yamaha used the term seafarer to describe those individuals who may not have access to state wrongful death statutes. It's unclear from my reading of Yamaha just who is and who isn't a seafarer.
You want to give them both, in other words. All right. What do you think about Mr. Farini's argument, as I understand it, going back to the question that you were discussing with the Chief Justice? His point, I think, if I understood it, is that, look, I agree, imagining he's making this argument. I agree with you. If a seaman is involved, you need a uniform admiralty law. If the seaworthiness of the vessel is involved, you need a uniform admiralty law. If a sea owner is involved, you need a uniform admiralty law. But in the absence of those things, the word uniformity has no reason. And moreover, here we're talking about a local person in a harbor, local circumstances, and so local law should prevail. And when you come back and say, well, isn't that equally true of injury, he says yes. But even if we've decided the opposite in respect to injury, let's not make matters worse. And here he would say, I guess, or I thought I heard him say, that this particular wrongful death statute is more local yet, because it is not the injured person's personal statute. It belongs to the survivors. They're the ones who are suing, and they are local people. And that's unlike a personal injury action. And indeed, you, in fact, have to pick up state law anyway, I've heard, in order to find out who those survivors are who are going to be able to sue. So he says this is even more local than the injury action. And besides, don't make matters worse. Now, I'm trying to paraphrase. I don't know if I've got it right. But if I'm trying to make it as strong as I can in my mind, now I want to hear your response.
Well, My response comes back to the activity that he was involved in and it not being a purely local.
Oh, no, it's absolutely on a ship. It's definitely an activity on a ship, but so what? I mean, what's the interest there?
Well,
anything on a ship, then you win by definition. But his point is, you see, that just being on a ship is not enough.
Well, he used the example where someone other than a ship, a crew member, drops the banana peel, and that would not be a maritime matter. Here, Your Honor's mentioned unseaworthiness, and vessel maintenance, vessel repair goes to the very heart of what
I was really looking for an answer in terms of precedent or in terms of what Justice Ginsburg is talking about or whether or not Moraine, in fact, did involve a question of a personal injury for negligence as applied to a longshoreman or did it. I'm really looking for an answer. Is he really asking us to back up too far or what's the precedent on it? What did Moraine decide this question for a longshoreman as to injury or? You say what you want to say. I want to hear your answer.
We contend that Moraine, when it referenced maritime duties in the plural, it meant to incorporate and encompass negligence-based wrongful death actions. And we think.
But that case itself involved an unseaworthiness claim, not a negligence claim.
Absolutely, Justice Ginsburg. It dealt with an unseaworthiness claim. That is correct.
And a vessel owner. Right.
Correct. And I'll keep coming back to the Robbins dry dock where, again, that distinction was not made. The vessel special subcategory called vessel negligence was not relied on.
Mr. O'Donnell, I hope that you will complete the answer to my question, which I think you hadn't yet answered. I didn't think your answer was as clear as the one Justice Breyer gave you, which was, your argument is now that we take away the limitation that Moraine is just on seaworthiness, it applies to negligence as well, then we have Yamaha, which means that anyone in the situation of Mr. Garris or his survivors has a choice between the state remedy or the federal remedy. It's not one or the other. That's what Justice Breyer said was your answer, but I'm not sure it was.
Well, I'm not arguing that if you recognize a negligence-based Moraine cause of action, you have swept the field of state wrongful death statutes. That is not our position. Our position is the elements of uniformity and to fill the fact that there is a federal duty with no corresponding remedy. Those issues counsel in favor of recognizing a Moraine negligence action, but it doesn't. We are not arguing here preemption.
I know you're not arguing it, but it's something I'd have to worry about. To be specific, I would worry if, in addition to all Mr. Farini's arguments, my deciding you're right in this case means I've wiped out all the wrongful death actions belonging to states that somebody who's injured on a ship might otherwise have. I would worry about that. So I would like you either to get rid of my worry or confirm my worry.
Well, I'm not sure where your worry springs from.
It springs from that just I may not have understood it, but I thought what we were talking about was the possibility that if you have a federal action in the area, you no longer can have the state action. So maybe it's so far off you're just going to dispose of my worry in a sentence, so do it.
No, Your Honor, but the state law may continue to apply. What you've done by creating the Moraine cause of action is you've gotten rid of that problem that the lower courts had to deal with in which they were trying to determine what aspects of state law they could apply and which were violative of federal maritime principles. I think you've actually cleaned up a problem as opposed to creating a new one. I don't see the answer to our request being incompatible with a continuation of state wrongful death statutes in territorial waters.
What was the reason why there was no state law avenue of recovery here? Because of the Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation Act being the exclusive remedy by reason of Virginia law? Or am I wrong about that?
No, our state wrongful death action would have been met with the application of the Virginia statutory employer bar
But the statutory employer bar in turn depend on the Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation Act coverage or some other?
No, there are two separate statutory employer bars, the Virginia and then the Longshoreman.
Yes.
And if we and the Fourth Circuit in Alamax decided that if you're bringing your action under the state wrongful death statute, then the state statutory employer bar applies and you are and we would have been out of court.
But why did the employer, the state employer bar apply in this case?
What, why wouldn't it apply in the federal case?
Yeah, why was the employer entitled to invoke the bar under Virginia law?
Because that, unlike the Longshoreman Harbor Worker Bar, the NorShipCo, there's no prohibition on NorShipCo using that bar, even though it didn't actually pay any benefits. It says if you're
Were the benefits paid under the Longshore?
Yes.
Act? So there is, then, a federal act which basically ultimately is the reason for there being no liability here. There's a Virginia state bar, but the Virginia state bar depends upon payment of premiums by the subsidiary corporation under the Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation Act.
No, the Virginia Act has no corresponding limit that limits it because you paid the benefits.
But you paid the benefits under a federal act, or am I wrong?
They were paid under a federal act.
All right, so ultimately it is a federal act that is the reason you have a bar.
No, because the Virginia bar would apply whether or not he received funeral benefits under the federal act.
Well, I'll think about it. I still think ultimately, I'm trying to help you. I think that ultimately it's the existence of the Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation Act and the benefits payments that were made by the subsidiary that invokes the bar. Or am I wrong about
that? That would not. I believe that's irrelevant to the application of the state bar. It's only relevant to the application of the Longshoreman Harbor Worker Act bar. In other words, if you actually pay the benefits under the Longshoreman bar, you receive the immunity. Under the state, there's no similar limitation.
Well, what is the state bar? Explain it. What is the state law in Virginia?
If you're in the status of prime contractor and your subcontractor has employees who are injured, you are considered their statutory employer under Virginia law. There's no exception to it as
and
there is
because
under
your subsidiary paid benefits under the and is covered by the federal by the Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation Act, you are entitled to invoke the state bar.
Where I'm having trouble, Justice Kennedy, is
you may be having trouble because I'm wrong, but I don't know I don't know what it is that the subsidiary employer did that it operated to allow the parent to invoke the state bar if it were not payment of Longshore Harbor Workers' Compensation benefits.
What I'm saying is that the payment. Let's assume there was no payments made to anyone. NorShipCo would still have, in the state wrongful death action, they fall under the definition of statutory employer and would therefore be able to claim that defense. The fact that they were paid under the federal statute doesn't affect that defense in state law, in the state wrongful death action.
All right. Thank you.
Would you go back to Robbins? You pointed out in your argument a second ago that the court in Robbins had made the remark that negligence in the course of this kind of repair work is not a matter of purely local concern, that it was properly maritime. Has there been any litigation? What I further assume to be the case is that the cause of action that Robbins recognized therefore, it had a counterpart, it had a parallel in state law, because Robbins didn't say it was a purely maritime issue, and so Robbins, as I understand it, left state law wherever it might be, and I presume there would have been a state law negligence action as well. Two questions. Am I right in that assumption that there was a state law negligence action parallel to what we recognized in Robbins? And if the answer is yes, can you tell me whether there has been any litigation in the ensuing 60 years, I guess, on the issue of whether the state law action may continue to be recognized in the light of the fact that there is also a federal cause of action.
Well, I would concede it's a confusing area. I don't know if there's any case that, first of all, with regard to Robbins, I don't read Robbins as preempting state wrongful death statutes generally. There is language in there about where the state law contradicts some fundamental feature of admiralty law. And so there is some of that, but I don't think the court went on. The court concluded the federal maritime law cause of action was to be the action because federal maritime jurisdiction existed.
Well, that was the only claim before it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so they said we recognize the federal maritime claim. Now, is it clear that there was a parallel state law claim and that there was some kind of a state law claim for negligence which could also have been brought on those same facts? Is that correct?
Yes, and that's why the court discussed the difference between the two laws.
All right. And any litigation subsequent to that as to whether the state law claim survives in whole or in part the recognition in Robbins of the maritime claim?
Well, in the Amtrak train crash litigation, the court goes through an analysis in which it looks at the federal the aspects and characteristics of the state wrongful death statute and concludes that because there's maritime jurisdiction, those rules cannot apply because they're directly contrary.
Conflict case, then.
Yeah, it's a conflict
okay.
case.
In a non-conflict situation, in other words, a kind of field preemption situation, in a common law context, any litigation on that?
I'm not aware of anything except, and as Justice Ginsburg points out, Yamaha did not precisely deal with this issue of negligence. But in Yamaha, I don't read any suggestion that the existence of the Moraine cause of action somehow the court seems to assume the existence of a negligence Moraine-based cause of action, else there's nothing there to displace the state law to begin with. So there's an implicit assumption in Yamaha that it exists.
Yamaha said if, assuming there were a federal claim, would that preclude a state claim? And the answer was no, it wouldn't. But that's why I was surprised that your answer is that, well, maybe it would.
Well, I meant to only talk in terms of where you have these conflicts with the federal law that currently exists. My position
is... All right, there certainly would be a claim in any state that was more generous than federal law that there was a conflict. So it looks like my concern... You win your case in this situation where the laws...
Thank you, Mr. O'Donnell. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.